Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Disclaimer, disclaimer, disclaimer. The intersection of technology and science is less of an intersection and more of a braided stream, splitting off and feeding back upon itself again and again. Along the banks of this stream, science makes discoveries that make technology possible.
Oh, and technology makes tools that make new discoveries in science possible, leading to greater advancements in technology, better tools.
And more science! We need more tech so we can use more tools, so we can do more science.
I mean, they couldn't exist without each other?
I think that's it. You can never have a conflict between them because each only exists as a collaboration with the other.
They help each other out.
Precisely. So, while we always love technology, today we're going to dig in deeper on how it crosses over with This Week in Science.
And Daily Tech News Show.
Coming up next.
The kind of mind that can't get enough. I wanna learn everything. I wanna fill it all up with new discoveries that happen every day of the week. There's only one place to go to find the knowledge I seek. I wanna know what's happening. What's happening? What's happening this week in science? What's happening? What's happening? What's happening this week in science?
Technology to everybody.
This is, oh my gosh, what is this? This is This Week in the Daily Science and Tech News Show podcast.
A mashup of This Week in Science and the Daily Tech News Show.
Okay, Tom, tell us about DTNS. What are you doing here? Who are you?
What are you doing here? Your chocolate's in my peanut butter. Wait, your
exactly.
Peanut butter's in my chocolate. Daily Tech News Show is what it says on the tin. It's a daily show about technology news. We try to help people understand the world of technology, make them the smartest in the room when other people are talking about technology by just kind of putting everything in context every day. And I do it with an amazing group of people, including my co-host, Sarah Lane. Hello, Sarah Lane.
Hello, everybody. Hello, tech people. Hello, science people. We are all one.
That's true. And our producer, Roger Chang. Hi, Roger.
Hello, all.
Hello, Roger. Meet Twiss.
Greetings, Twiss. I know two of them. I've talked to the third remotely.
So,
Kiki, we have explained DTNS. What the heck is TWIS?
TWIS is a weekly science talk show variety show. We bring the weekly science news. We talk, we introduce it, we discuss it, we come up with questions. We like to inspire curiosity in people. And, you know, even though we maybe don't have as many water cooler conversations anymore, we want to make you the most interesting person at that cocktail party or water cooler when people can start hanging out again.
So wait a minute. If you listen to Daily Tech News Show and This Week in Science, you will dominate cocktail parties.
Absolutely. You will always have something intelligent and amazing to talk about. People will be like, what? What are these things that you know? It'll be amazing. But we've come together for this episode.
Yeah,
my co-hosts here. I've got my co-hosts here. Yes, Justin, right there. Where are you? Say hi, Justin.
Hi, Justin. I'm in broadcasting from a Central European time in the great state of Denmark.
That's fantastic. Thank you for joining us in the middle of your night. Blair.
Hey-o.
Hey-o.
How's it going?
It's good. Blair is our animal zoologist host. Justin is our opinionologist. I'm the doctor.
Perfect.
We like to split it up. But we've come together with DTNS. Why? Why have we done this?
Well, there's an intersection of science and technology. And I listen to This Week in Science and I think, oh, that's a really interesting aspect of a story that we did on DTNS, or that could have been a story. Or I'm just, you know, hearing about the fact that when I scream out of joy, it means I have an evolutionary advantage. So I learn a lot from Twiss. And I thought, man, we do cross over from time to time. So I wanted to see if maybe we could bring those powers together for even better understanding.
The powers for understanding the world around us and hopefully having a really good time bringing science and technology, peanut butter and chocolate together, right? I mean, we have crossed over. I've gotten to be on DTNS. Blair's been on DTNS. Justin, you've been on DTNS, yes?
No.
Not yet? No. See, and Sarah has yet to be on Twiss. So these are things that we still need to work out. But Roger and Tom, you've been on Twiss.
Yeah, yeah.
We've done these individual crossovers. So now we have the Hollywood Squares Brady Bunch of science and technology.
We're trying to build our
bingo cards. We're getting there. We're almost, we've almost won bingo. Just a few little...
So
little,
close.
Little checks left. Yeah.
I know. Gotta get there. All right, Tom. Let's tell people where they can find us on our regular shows, and let's dive in. Let's make this show.
Yeah,
go.
Yeah, yeah. So we're gonna talk about the intersection of technology and science. We're gonna do some philosophical musing, talk about some stories, do some trivia. But if you like what you hear and you want more technology, you can find us at dailytechnewsshow.com.
And you can find Twiss at twiss.org. All right. What are we starting with?
We're going to start with a question from Josh. We got a bunch of emails, both shows did, suggesting things to talk about. We're going to talk about a lot of them on the show. But Josh in particular asked, when did science and technology become two separate things? In the 80s, they used to be covered mostly together. But in the last decade, technology has mostly come to mean things coming from some of the big names in the game. When did CRISPR become science, while a real estate company like WeWork, where tech work is done, become a tech company?
Oh, well, I would argue that WeWork is not a tech company. I think people working in the tech sector used WeWork as a co-working space. I mean, there are many, but it was a very popular one around the world. And, you know, some of them are really fancy and everything. But, I mean, there's nothing really tech about it except that a lot of people working in tech would hang out there or drop the name or do a lot of travel and hang out at WeWorks. But I get your point, Josh, and it's funny because I do think science and technology are very intrinsically
intertwined.
Yes, exactly. In fact, I mean, I can almost think of there are not that many technology stories that I don't also think, well, that is science. You know, it's just a kind of science. And there's probably a little bit more vice versa than ever on the science side because there's so much technology involved. It does sort of bother me, though. You know, when you get a drop-down menu where you're trying to, I don't know, define yourself or your show or just pick a category and it's like, blah, 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 entertainment, music, science, and technology. It's always the two together. And I sometimes want a little bit more detail on each because both of those things can be many different things. It's they're such huge categories that I feel like we need a lot more subcategories to make it make sense.
I think the shift notably happened, like where there was a definite segmentation is when technology became a business concern as well, where we're making money, and the economic aspect suddenly thrust what used to be collectively kind of the science, tech, biology, life sciences, they grouped them all together, was now its own thing because a lot more people cared about this particular aspect because it involved dollars and cents, as opposed to science, which is very important for a lot of things, but for the average news viewer, it might have been considered an esoteric piece that you would read along with the sports pages. But when it came to like things like, where do I put my investment? You know, which company should I buy A, B, C, or D product from? You know, that's a technology thing. Probably, I would say somewhere in probably the latter half of the 90s, you started to see that shift, at least for
Yeah. And I think that's it. Companies like Google came out of computer science research projects. It was science at a point, developing an algorithm. What is this thing? How do we explain it? And creating the knowledge around a search algorithm. That was the computer science aspect. And then they took it, rolled it out into a company. And that is something that happens much more often nowadays, where the research, the science, the development of that knowledge then gets turned into application. How can we take the science of CRISPR, this aspect of microbial biology, this thing that is just naturally happening in bacteria, and turn it into a probably multi-billion dollar technology that's going to be used by researchers around the world for decades to come, and probably turned into even new technologies.
It's so interesting you say that, because one of the upcoming fields is biotech, right? Mm-hmm. What used to be life sciences, biology research, what my sister used to do, which was microbiology, is now becoming a business. And so now you got to segment it out because, again, people want to know, where do I invest? Is this something that's going to make me or make my company or perhaps make my, city or state, if the government invests in it, a return? And so, I mean, it's weird. As soon as you put a dollar symbol on something, how you perceive it shifts dramatically.
It's when it becomes a product, right? As soon as there's a science delivers a product, it gets separated out. And because we're talking about from the 80s, but cars was science, technology. I mean, radio was TVs were these breakthroughs, but they didn't keep talking about the science behind how your TV works. That stopped immediately after the thing was invented. And then they were like, maybe one day science will invent colors and figure out a way to do that. So I think I think it's always separated. I think it comes together for these brief moments. When I heard this question, the first thing I thought about was when we invented the first stone tool. Well, not us. It was Homo habilis, like 3 million years ago.
Yeah, I remember.
And that may actually, there's a whole thing there where that might actually be why we're bipedal. That might actually be why we got big brains. Is because we started messing with this tool and manipulating and wanting to set it down. So you can't climb a tree if you got your favorite stone tool. And then if you're making stone tools, you need to use both the hands together. So you're not going to hold your weight with it. So a lot of human evolution may have actually started with a piece of tech first, but then it was a million years or so before we changed that stone tool. And then that stone tool, that big advanced stone tool, stuck with us for 2 million years before somebody thought of changing it.
Could you imagine being the beta user for 2 million years?
Yeah, it took a really
beta
long
tester.
Time.
Oh, man, we're still in testing.
Our brains
this is
had
Google.
To get bigger first.
I mean, over a million years, is it really a beta test or is it just a slow evolution of a...
It's a Google beta test.
Yeah.
It's a Google beta, yeah.
People talk about these phones, handheld devices as being crafted to fit the human hand. No, humans have been crafted around a handheld tool since we started being upright. We've had a handheld tool in our hand throughout all of before human, current modern human evolution. Millions of years. Yeah.
What do you got there, Tom?
Yeah, just one of my original stone tools that I was trying out. Yeah.
We've been lugging those around for 3 million years. So this is not some strange new thing that happened where we're going to pick up this device that we carry in our hands all the time. We've always done this. This is always how humans have been on the planet.
I feel like when I think about this intersection, I think about science being the story that's we might have figured something out. We've got evidence that something is happening. We tried something out in a lab and we think we can make it work. And when we cover those on Daily Tech News Show, it's usually like, and if they can make it work, this is what you'll be able to do with it, right? Technology is the application of like, okay, when, like you were saying, Justin, it's a product. When can I get it in my hands? When can I do something with it? And science is what makes technology possible. It's almost a subset, really.
Well, yeah, science is that one Australopithecus or whatever. that's throwing an apple at a mastodon. That didn't work well. And then, hey, maybe a small stick. Yeah, that didn't do anything. And then eventually got around to a stone that hit it. And, you know, like, okay, that had an effect. Let's concentrate on the rocks and see if we can find the right size that we can both throw and take out or whatever it is, right? Yeah. And then once they've like, okay, now we're starting to, we have what's going to be a stone. We're going to throw it. Here's how we're going to throw it. Here's the size and weight it should be. Oh, you know, the perfecting of that is, that's what I usually think of as technology. Once it takes off and becomes, people are innovating on it and making it better and improving, making these little improvements stepwise to make the best version of a thing that you throw at something or whatever it is. That's sort of my vision of what technology is, until science comes up with a whole other thing.
And then technology, because of the iteration of technology, then science is able to do more. So it's this feedback loop also. Science creates technologies. Technologies enable science. And they drive each other.
Right, because you make the science that makes the phone possible, and then the phone starts to be used in research, which then makes other things possible, and round and round it goes. And to carry Justin's metaphor even farther, once everybody's got a hand axe, suddenly it's still technology, but nobody thinks of it that way. It's just common, right? It's just a thing.
Nobody's impressed that you have a million hand axe a million years ago, because it's been around for a million years. They're going to be around for another million. Humans, by the way, did massively innovate the smaller versions of the tools. We were the ones who were like, hey, that's a great idea. Let's make it smaller. that's when we took over stone tool making.
I've got little pockets.
We did the same thing.
I'd like to put them in my little female pockets.
But we just made them all smaller and smaller so we could do more delicate work. Like, I like that, but yeah, it doesn't fit too big in my pocket. I want one I can put on my wrist and carry around with me, and then go do some scraping of tendons later. It's been absolutely no change in our desire as humans.
I do wonder about, though, like, the way that science feeds into technology and technology feeding into science. Is there ever, we run into issues every once in a while with the challenges to how technology is implemented, how people use it. We run into issues where the science isn't moving fast enough to be able to keep up with the pace of the information that people want. And then there's also the ethics around how you do the science, and also the technology. We're talking about so many ethical issues in technology stuff today. So it's not just happy, happy, joy, joy. I think there's also a lot of challenges in how the two work together moving forward as well.
Yeah. And I think that is one of the things technology looks for more often, maybe, than in the past, is help us understand the effect of this technology, because it's having effects faster and at a wider level than it used to. Especially the social sciences and economic sciences are being pushed more than ever before to look at the effects that technology has.
Well, and if I can say something about the premise of this question for a second, I think that this kind of speaks to the human's urge to categorize things, which I talk about a lot. But ultimately, that's what this is about, right? Is that we better understand things when we can see what things are similar, categorize them, put them into nice little boxes, but they don't always fit. And so when science and technology have expanded so much over the last however many decades because of the improvement of all of it, mostly technology that helps us get science, right, that then helps us get more technology, that back and forth, that the breadth of knowledge available out there has caused us to have to find these delineations to better understand the world, which, again, they're never going to be perfect. There's a story that I might call a science story and you might call a tech story, and there's going to be overlap.
And that's something that on Daily Tech News Show, we talk about all the time. You know, there are stories where we're like, this is such a cool story, but is it tech enough for this show, particular show? And of course, it depends on the day. You know, there's certain days where it's like, yeah, it fits. It kind of flows with the other stuff that we're talking about. Other days we go, it's science, but it's not totally tech. And that is often a really gray area. And we have a portion of the show that we sort of dedicate to stories like that, where it's like, it's more science than tech, but it's cool and we're going to do it. And that's great. But yeah, it's a question that does come up pretty often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm thinking though, that this will kind of, Josh's question in our conversation here can kind of take us into the next segment of the game, of the show. This is game show that we have going on.
You've revealed the truth. The show is just one big game.
One big game. It is. Yes. I have a game that I want to play with everybody. Have you ever heard of the game Never Have I Ever?
Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to change it a little bit and we're going to play Never Would I Ever. And I want you to think about some of these questions that the driving force of technology and science are making possible and bringing into it seems like sci-fi, but it's not so much sci-fi. It's becoming real. And some of the questions that the listeners addressed to us in their suggestions kind of bring up, there were a lot of overlaps between a lot of questions and a lot of suggestions. And so here's questions for you. I want you to tell the audience whether or not you would do this thing. And then if we get into the why or the why not, and maybe we can change each other's minds. Maybe, just maybe. I want to hear people's arguments. Let's debate. Would you, there's a story out this week on a monkey-human chimera, embryos that have been created. Would you ever create a monkey-human chimera? Would you mix human and monkey cells?
Maybe.
See, at one level, I'm just to prove that I could do it. Just be like, hey, look what I did. But
I mean, chimeras generally don't live very long. So, I mean, if you're asking
not with
me
that
what
attitude, they don't.
Well, no, I will not.
Well,
like,
not if you don't help them.
I mean, if you're asking if I create a human monkey hybrid creature, like one that's birthed and, like, you know, alive, that would be different than just dealing with the cells. For example, if I was doing some sort of gene sequencing and then I decided to, oh, let me see what some rhesus monkey genes over here might do. I mean, for me, I think I'm okay with that. It's then taking it beyond that, like where you want to create an organism that, you know, is in homeostasis and the rest of it, and it's alive and it's doing all its things. That's a little more creepy.
I think
go ahead. Yeah.
Go ahead. Oh, no, you first.
I was just going to say, I think that usually when we talk about chimeras, you picture this crazy sci-fi thing. But really, it's like, but what if you had the lungs of a monkey? Which, I mean, we put pig arteries in our body all the time, right? Mm-hmm. So to a certain extent, if this is going to help the medical field, it doesn't really bother me at all.
Yeah. I mean, they have glow in the dark fish. I mean, it's not like they were naturally found in the wild that way.
Oh, but you don't know.
I think some of them are, right? That's how they
they bioengineered like aquarium
in the deep blue sea. Okay, so Blair, this is actually the question that I was going to ask. What you were just describing, because in the Nature.com article that was describing, you know, the research advancement that had happened and the fact that you know, we've got these chimera embryos that are living not for very long, but longer than they had in the past, and the fact that scientists are a little split on whether or not this is a good idea and where it's really going. My question was, okay, well, if it's about being able to create organs that could be transplanted into humans to help a human survive, or even an animal, really, but let's go with humans for now. Great. Well, why would a hybrid be better than just me having a monkey lung from a monkey embryo? Well, you know, what's why does that get stronger?
Well, the idea is that if you have a hybrid, for example, I mean, I remember
the chimera, this,
15 years ago, they were kicking around the idea of doing pig human chimeras because then the pig could grow whatever, your liver.
And
then,
they are doing that too.
And you could
they are.
The idea, of course, is when you do an animal to human transplant, there's always a high risk of organ rejection to your body because it's like, dude, you're trying to attach something to me that doesn't belong
here. Oh, so more of the human cells in there means possibly more that it takes?
You could grow a lung that is possibly, you know, in orders of magnitude more compatible with a person than if you just tried to take it out of a run-of-the-mill.
Okay, then my question is flipped. Where does the animal make this stronger?
Well, I got that. Because if you don't have the animal there at all, then you've got a human you're taking the organ from. And that's a different set of ethical issues.
They're maybe deceased, and it gets weirder from there.
Maybe? Yeah. Hopefully? I don't know.
No, that's it. You have a body farm of other humans, then we're in a whole different sci-fi.
Got it. Yes. Future. I think I've seen a few movies about
this. Is it the island or whatever?
Never ended well.
Tom, do you have an opinion?
I mean, would I know? Because they probably just wouldn't take. I'm just not very good at that. Would I want someone else to do it? I go with the maybe of, I think this is important for research, but it's certainly a situation that has to have a lot of guidelines and discussion and people looking over each other's shoulder, accountability and all that sort of thing. But yeah, I don't think it's something that is wrong to pursue at all.
Yeah, I agree. I think this research is fantastic. I would, if I could, create a chimera, I would be that scientist. I'd be like, let's put these things together. And I want to know answers to evolutionary questions about human brains and where they came from. What genes in the ape family are responsible that changed or didn't change? What RNA is responsible? What proteins? Like, I would want to know those evolutionary questions. And so I think from a research standpoint, it's fantastic. From a potential to create organs, the pig human chimeras, that stuff, it's so valuable. And I look forward to the day that it happens.
So we get the Planet of the Apes, and then you'll be sorry.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I think this is actually comes a little bit to the question we were asked before about the ethics. At some point, it seems like science gets to start this, but the technology of actually doing this reliably is so far into the future, we think, that we don't have to really worry or think too much about the ethical thing. So if that all falls on tech at some point, and science is like, oh, yeah, we're just an idea when we had it.
We weren't actually going to do anything with
Facebook's new winged monkeys. I'm not so cool with that. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I honestly think every science and tech person should take ethics courses before they are allowed to get into business of anything.
I don't know. Maybe everybody should.
And you need to pass those courses. You just can't take it and drop it 2 weeks later.
No.
That would be very ethical.
Next question. Would you or wouldn't you inject yourself with nanoparticles?
Only if they've been thoroughly vetted on someone else.
No, so you don't want to be the beta tester. Okay.
Interesting. Yeah, because we got Dan and Javon both asked about this, the idea of injecting nanoparticles in our body. And to me, it's no different than injecting any other particle in our body, which is, has it been tested? Has it been thoroughly vetted? Am I doing it for a good reason? You know, is it gonna cure my cancer? And it's been clinically tried to be relatively safe. Then sure. Is it like, I don't know what it'll do? We haven't tried it before. No. Then you're not injecting those nanoparticles in me. Not at all.
Yeah, I think loyal Twist listeners will know that I plan on living over 200 years, and this is exactly how, is as soon as medical advances exist and have been through clinical trials, I want it. I want it immediately.
Give me the nanoparticles. Yeah.
What do you want them to do, though? Just prolong life? That
do you just want them to take space, take up space, or like turn you into a tree?
They're very small, Roger.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you want to be a long-lived organism, you're either a jellyfish or a sequoia.
What kind of nanoparticles would you like?
Is it just microplastics? Yeah. Like, I don't need any more of those. But if it's like,
yeah,
okay,
if it's gonna patrol my bloodstream, yeah, I'm on Blair's side if it's gonna fix stuff, yeah.
But if this is gonna go up into connected somewhere into my dendrites, and now I can understand any language, and I now know what the squirrels are talking about. That might be fun. I might be interested in seeing what everything is talking about around me.
Yeah, there's a sci-fi story, and I'm blanking on the name of the author right now, but there are nanoparticles that you ingest, and they incorporate into your brain to create something of a neural net that allows you to connect to the internet with your brain so that you can then be one with the information of the universe, of the internet.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, I know.
How would you hear the questions of your brain being hacked and all this, you know, that brings up all sorts of
interesting
questions.
It's like a YouTube live stream all the time.
I'm just worried about connectivity. Like, it's going to, you know, it's always going to go out. It's going to freeze. I'm going to be waiting for an answer for like 20 minutes because the network's
down. Can you imagine? You're like, we're going to kill at trivia tonight. And you're like, ah, crap, I'm offline.
Not connected. Sorry. I got no connection here.
Your stream of consciousness is bogarting all my bandwidth.
Your stream of consciousness is buffering.
And you get so used to the constant connection that you can't do anything without a connection. So right. As soon as you go offline, you're like, how do I boil water again? I don't remember.
Yeah, no need to commit anything to memory.
I don't know. Yeah, but there needs to be definitely that continued research and clinical trials. Don't just inject nanoparticles. Although I know there are some DIY bio people out there who will just inject nanoparticles and other things because that's what they're doing. It's
let
DIY.
Us learn from them.
Yeah, we will. We will.
Yes,
I think the whole thing is, what is the function? What is the thing that you want it to do? Are we talking about this versus getting chemotherapy? This versus getting a surgery? Are we talking about this as just a cosmetic appeal or a, you know, I need enough of a reason to do anything. But I mean, people will radiate their bodies with poison to fight cancer.
Yeah.
Okay. So we know there's a point there. Yes. We all would probably say that's fine. That's a good solution to whatever I'm up against. But just casually? Probably not. Probably not.
Yeah. Take a shot. Nanoparticle shot. All right. Next question. Would you clone a mammoth?
Yes.
Yes. That's... It's everyone but Blair.
A setup question, wasn't it?
It was. For those of you who watch...
I feel personally attacked.
It wasn't me. I promise I didn't sneak this one in.
Thank you, Jeremy Fath, for that donation. Really appreciate that.
You're welcome.
So longtime Twist listeners will know that we have an ongoing debate on Twist about whether or not mammoths should be cloned and reanimated. So here's the question. Would you ever clone an endangered species that's still alive, i.e. the red-footed ferret that that it was recently cloned for conservation purposes. Would you ever clone something like a mammoth, which has been long dead, but bring it back? Would you ever clone a person? Mm-hmm. Which one of those? Any of them?
So, like, we have to answer. So, for endangered species, yes, although there are concerns of low genetic diversity. Like, you know, if you have...
You were quick on the yes to the mammoth, I noticed.
I was going to go on. The mammoth is a very special case for me because as far as I understand, mammoths bit it for two reasons. One, because of of the end of the Ice Age, too, because of people overhunting them. So if there was a way to bring back something that we kind of knocked off the planet because we got, you know, we got super excited about, you know, hunting elephants, that's kind of cool. Humans, I don't know. I mean, that would actually have to be up to the person you're trying to clone if they wanted that or not. Like, oh, if it was me, I don't know. I don't think the world needs another me. But if it was someone else and, like, they lost a sibling or something, but you had enough of their cells to clone them, I mean, I think maybe that decision should be left up to them.
Yeah, I don't know what John Hogan did in the chat room, bringing back Neanderthal. I didn't think of it as bringing back a currently alive person. But like a distant cousin of the Neanderthal, or Denisovans.
That would be similar to cloning a mammoth. That would be that kind of a question.
Recently,
but what about a living person? Would you clone a living person?
I mean, it gets weird, right? Because, okay, let's say, you know, Roger's alive and well, and we clone Roger. Well, then it's a Roger baby. So it's not like we just have two Rogers that are like carbon copies of each other.
It would be
It's like the whole thing, it would take a long time to, if for some reason you wanted a replica, you got 40 years we got to deal with here.
And there's all the external stimulus, right, that create a person. It's not just the gene set.
I've thought about that in regards to cloning pets.
Yeah,
where I've thought like, oh, you know, I loved our dog Django. She was the best. She's been mentioned on Twist before, and I've thought about, would I clone that dog? And I'm like, no, because it wouldn't be Django. Mm-hmm. It would be a dog very much like her in many respects, but it wouldn't have her experiences. And even with a dog, there are experiences that shape their personalities, much more so with a human, I would think.
Yeah, I think animals, humans, there are genetic aspects to personality, but there is definitely, I mean, we talk about it all the time, Blair, nature versus nurture, where it's environmental factor is huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, if you want to take like the very far out non-emotional look, if you're looking just at populations and conservation and the success of species, you don't clone humans because there's too many of us. So that's out the window. But then if you're going to take the resources to clone a species, and it's the resources, I mean, you know, money and manpower, but I also mean the niche, the space, the space to keep them, the food they will be eating, and the fact that they have to be eaten by something. If you want to take that space and put something in it, it makes way more sense to put something in that space that currently has an established niche rather than something that does not. And so I think that's where the whole mammoth argument always comes up. And the situation like the black-footed ferret, they are currently, there's only about 250 of them, but they currently are in the wild. They have a habitat. They have a prey. They have competitors. And so it would be very easy and good for the environment to put them back in there. But with mammoths, you have to disrupt a lot of things to make a space for them in an ecosystem.
Yeah, you have mammoth park.
That might build out its own biome. I mean, like we've talked about with reintroducing the beaver or the gray wolf. It creates this whole other ecosystem around it that can actually build a more diverse biodiversity in the area.
But that's something that was just gone, and this is something that is going to displace current
10,000 years. That's nothing.
Yes, but mammoths will displace species that currently are alive and potentially push them to extinction.
We are already doing
any extinct, any cloned extinct species is essentially an invasive species, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, so is actually technically, if you start to look at it, everything's about to be an invasive species with global warming, because as every creature has to change its territories at different rates, they're all going to move together. It's not going to be like, ready? 1 degree, count of three, 1, 2, all right, let's move. They're going to go piecemeal. Everything's going to overlap. It's going
to
make
But we didn't directly, we may have caused that to happen, but we didn't do it directly.
Right. Like actually putting an
two
animal
into a
place.
Two wrongs don't make
a
right, Justin. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, no, but at some point there's the rules don't really apply to what's nature. What's the natural state of any region or area or how it's been for the last, 20,000 years isn't going to count in 100 years.
I just want my Cenozoic park. You can't have Jurassic Park, but you could feasibly.
Cenozoic.
Yeah, you could have like a couple of mammoths, no mastodons, maybe some saber-tooth cats, maybe a woolly rhino, maybe three.
What about the giant sloth?
Giant sloths. I'd love one of those.
Giant ground sloths. I love that.
Yeah.
How would you know? If they were alive, they could be very mean. And then you
doesn't mean I don't love them.
Blair only doesn't love animals if they attack her or if they don't want to exist. So
fair. Yes.
I think this is a fascinating conversation because, 20 years ago, before Dolly, before the first cloned animal, the first cloned sheep, this was such a sci-fi conversation, and I don't think that science and tech and that people were having the conversation at the level that we're having. I mean, we're pretty high level folks, but, people weren't having this kind of a conversation about cloning. It was, oh, my God, upsetting the universe. And suddenly we're like talking nuance about when and where and how.
We cloned those ferrets, so I guess that's okay. What else should we do? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. My last question is very techie. Would you get a neural prosthetic? Would you get Elon Musk's chip in your head? Would you get...
So this is the prosthetic that can interpret like your brain signals, your nerve signals, right?
Right. Yeah.
I think if you could regain functionality that you had lost with a hand or a leg or an eye or an ear, I would think, yes, I absolutely would.
Anyone else?
I mean, it depends. Like, if it's safe and there's no weird, like, downside, like someone being able to control your motor functions.
Your arm is no longer your arm.
Yeah, like that would be kind of weird. Like, I've been
definitely
hacked.
Need multi-factor authentication.
Yes.
Yeah.
But if you weren't like replacing a something that was, that like a lost limb or something, and it could give you the ability to like remotely drive your car, maybe that'd be kind of cool. I mean, right. Like,
that's where it gets less obvious to me is like, okay, where should the line be drawn? Or should there be one? Should you be allowed to control anything with your brain that we can let you control?
I mean, the argument, of course, being how's that any different than you using a smartphone in your hand doing the same commands to remotely activate your automobile or access your bank account? It's just removing the middleman of an appendage and a device.
Mm-hmm.
You
could argue that
away.
The phone... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just reiterating what he was saying too. Yeah, a lot of the sexiness of that is kind of gone when you can just do a voice command out loud and make a thing happen.
Yeah, you could almost think of if you're holding a smartphone and you're doing something remotely, it's an extension of your arm. Because what if it was just under your skin? It's clearly it isn't. You could sort of think of it that way. I'm all for this. I had a bum shoulder at the end of last year, and it's better now, but it took a while. And, during that time when I was feeling sorry for myself, I was like, what if it just never gets better? Because you don't know if it's, when you're really in a lot of pain and you're injured. And anything that anyone could have knocked on my door in a weird suit and been like, would you like a neural prosthetic? Your shoulder will be healed. I'd say, yep, I do.
Feels like we're a little bit in the writer's room, like from 20, 30, 50 years ago, we're sitting in the writer's room. I think we should be able to control like screens by moving a hand. Now, I think it'd be better if we said a word because people are just going to think we're waving like a mad person. Yeah, but then we're talking to ourselves. That's going to look crazy. Well, it would be even better. What if we had a little plug that just eject, we're kind of trying to create the way that we live in this mythical supernatural future. But
because I actually would prefer to be able to just think something at a voice assistant than say it, because sometimes it doesn't really understand me, which I guess could be true of reading my brain as well. But especially when I'm out and about on a walk, I don't want to have to say it in front of other people that are around, you know, walking around too. It would be nicer if I could just keep it to myself. But that doesn't make good TV, right? It's like, yeah, we can't just have people walking around TV silently.
But that also means you don't have the chaos of inner conversations that are taking place here, where for no apparent reason, I only for half a second thought about a snack. I didn't mean to open the fridge. Now it's closed again, but now the cupboard's open, and now the TV's on, because remember that show? And then we talked something about radio and it turned on all of a sudden. I didn't mean to do that. I can't shut it off.
Your hand doesn't wildly fly up every time you think about throwing a ball, right? There's different ways of controlling it.
It does. Stop saying that.
Actually, the worst is kind of my, like implant-to-implant communication, where you're just like, I'm talking to Sarah, but instead of using an IM client or anything, I'm just using, you know, thinking about it. And then you have that like deviation of the inner monologue that somehow just bleeds through, and you know, suddenly Sarah's, you know, learning why I hate the checkout count
or much more personal. Yeah. No, I mean, boy, if your brain is being shared with me, it's like you gotta be really specific about which folder am I sharing with Sarah? Well,
some people already lack the filter, right? In a conversation.
I don't share my computer with people. I am not sharing my brain with people.
Permissions are very important when sharing your brain. I wanted to throw in this too, because John, who suggested this topic, was talking about Star Trek Voyager and biological processors. It's one thing to say, would you like your brain to control something? Would you like brains that are processors to be in your devices?
Like cellular. Biological?
Yeah, or like a biological processor.
So, I mean, it's very interesting.
Slime mold phone? Yes.
Yeah.
No.
they've been creating with basically biological computers, like DNA-based. Mm-hmm.
DNA computing's a thing, yep.
And one of the things they found is they're great at parallel tasks, but they're really slow, right, compared to a digital computer. So instead of counting things out in milliseconds or nanoseconds, you're talking minutes, hours, days, months. But they're really good at parallel processing stuff. So it's really just finding a data set that is most applicable to that kind of processing power. I think it would be great. I mean, you know, the whole going back to Voyager, there's that whole episode where the neural packs get a cold or like a flu or something. They're all sick and the half the ship's down. When you have that, do you have to worry about things like, oh, I got to vaccinate? Like when you talk about antivirus and vaccinating your computer, you're actually injecting something into it. It's kind of cool. I mean, you know, the idea being that the human brain or a biological brain can do feats that we haven't yet been able to replicate using a binary digital machine. But that would be kind of cool. I think my only question would they be robust? Like, would you be able to have something portable? I dropped my phone on the floor, and as long as I have a screen protector, it still works. Like, would my computer, if I had a biological computer, suddenly have a concussion?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Right now, on a special edition of Tools and Weapons, Brad Smith is sharing a vision for what Microsoft calls the new AI economy. It's an idea rooted in technological revolutions of the past, like the printing press, which created a vibrant marketplace of related innovations, ultimately leading to an explosion of books and readers. But he doesn't just give a history lesson. In the episode, Brad lays out the tangible ways that Microsoft is providing infrastructure and other support to those leading the charge of the new AI economy. And he explains the importance of using that infrastructure to ensure equitable access to AI to people all over the world. To stay current on insights from voices at the center of the conversation on AI, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you like to listen. My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. And
then maybe, I mean, we have good meat suits to carry our processor around, you know, like, but they do get concussions.
Sometimes lets us down.
I mean, when you take your meat suit and throw it off a cliff, you're bound to potentially have some issues. I mean, you got to be careful.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a material, right? It's easy to think like, oh, it's DNA. It's going to be fragile. It's like everything in technology can be fragile. You have to harden it. You have to figure out how to protect it. You don't want your DNA to get a literal virus.
I love the idea, though, of being able to communicate with other biological entities through information. So there's a group, Backyard Brains, that's been developing these experimental kits for classrooms and for kids to be able to basically plug your nervous system into all sorts of things and control devices. And they showed that you can use your arm and your electric signals of your arm to stimulate mimosa plants to close their leaves, or Venus flytraps to close, and to you can actually use human physical electrochemical stimuli and transmit it to a plant to force them to do things. So is there a back the feedback from that? Can we learn the signals that plants are giving their electrochemical conversations to be able to understand what they're talking about? We talk about communication in dolphins or gorillas or other intelligent animals, but what about communication in plants? And can we learn that on a basic data level, which I think would be really interesting?
Grow the tomatoes round. Think about my turn. I mean, it'd be kind of interesting. I mean, it would be sort of like Aquaman, except instead of talking to the fishes, you're just talking to your crops.
Talking to your crops. Oh, are you fighting off pests right now?
Poison ivy.
Oh, are you fine?
Poison ivy.
Superhero poison ivy.
Poison ivy. Exactly.
Super villain. Yes.
Yeah. She's a villain to some, hero to others, I suppose.
Yeah, she's
but as
an
long
eco-terrorist.
As my corn is sweet and it pops in the microwave, it's all good.
All right. Well, we have one more listener suggested topic. Kiki, should we get on to that?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so Sandy had written in about NFTs and blockchain and power consumption. And I would like us to talk about that from the perspective of responsible science communication, responsible technology reporting. I've held off reporting a lot of the claims of blockchain energy use because it was a lot of claims and sometimes, not always, but sometimes even some false comparisons. But we don't have a lot of science. There's a little bit, but we don't have a lot about what's actually happening, what the actual impacts are. Recently, there was a peer-reviewed journal article in Nature Communications that we talked about on DTNS that actually did some looking at, like, okay, how much power does this use? What effect does it have? I'd like to see more of that work done on it. And I thought we could all talk about our various lines of where we say, like, oh, wait, that's not worth talking about because that's not real science or tech. That one's close enough that we could talk about it a little, or that's solid. That's something that we can really dig into, and we won't be misleading people because it's got real, either real technology or real science behind it.
Yeah. So for the NFTs, I mean, generally, I'm steering clear of those on Twist, but we have talked about the blockchain and the energy consumption. We have had those stories many times because it's been a concern for a while as to how much energy is being used. But there is that question of how does it compare Like, mm-hmm. where does it really truly stack up? And I think this is one of the hardest questions to really parse an answer for, being able to understand how any industry impacts at all of its levels environmentally. What energy uses? Where does the energy come from? How is it being implemented? I mean, I think with technology, we do know, like Google servers, Facebook servers, all these things, you use so much energy. And then, you know, my computer right now is, yeah, and the screen that I'm using. Every house is using more and more power as a result of these technologies being online.
Well, I think we're using less individually.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, because we have more power-efficient devices, right? Yeah.
The refrigerator, I was talking about this, like, I think it's the refrigerator and your house lights. If you've done the switch over to the LEDs or just some more modern efficient light bulbs, you're using less electricity than you were without them, right? You're using like less than half. Like one of the most expensive appliances in the household used to be the refrigerator, and now it runs like a 30, 40 watt light bulb. It's almost nothing compared to what it used to be. So the more efficient we get, the more we keep pushing for solar to also be part of the equation, the less we're actually going to need to be generating per individual. The other side is, of course, there's a lot more of us, and we have a lot of the world that's
These server farms very often are being placed in places where renewable, sustainable energy is dominant. So, I mean, I know Google and Facebook have server farms that are out in the Dalles, out the Columbia River, because there's amazing water and wind power out there. And they're taking advantage of that free energy, almost free energy, to be able to power their needs. And then we know that this is happening also in China and other places for the blockchain servers.
Yeah, Microsoft is doing data servers off the coast of Scotland that are wave powered and even water cooled. There's a lot of good experiments happening there. So it's when I see this thing that's like, you know, blockchain uses as much power as Denmark. I'm like, well, I bet you could say that about a lot of things. There's a little cherry picking going on.
Totally.
There, right. And so I'm like, tell me something more useful. It's not that I don't believe that the blockchain is using a lot of energy. I know it is, but how much really? And one of the pieces of research that I'm hoping someone's doing, and I can't wait to see, is what is the financial industry not on the blockchain do, right? Because there's a lot of servers and there's a lot of buildings and telecommunications and people in offices that are causing transfers of money right now. It takes 3 days on this really ancient network to get money around. How much power does that whole system use versus if we did it all on the blockchain? And if it turns out that the blockchain's worse, then okay, that's good to know. It's like, all right, then we're not saving power there.
Some of it is the argument isn't directly, although tangentially related to the blockchain, but it's like when you're mining cryptocurrency, you know, the argument goes, and I'm not arguing one way or against it, but like you are processing or you're literally processing in the argument for nothing. You're just you're creating a token, especially if it's not like a well-known, like a Bitcoin or something, like it's like a new cryptocurrency. So the argument is that, like, should we be doing that at all? And oftentimes the argument kind of, I kind of what we've done here is we've devolved it into a simple, you know, like it's using a lot of energy or it's not. And it should be more about, are there smarter ways to go about doing this instead of having what we have right now, like server farms to, you know, to crunch away every time you make an adjustment, the blockchain ledger needs to be updated. If it needs to be updated in multiple places, then all those places are going
to
require
power.
I think where you're going with this is there's different ways of doing blockchain mining. There's proof of work and proof of stake, and a lot of people say, well, proof of work uses a lot more energy than proof of stake, so proof of stake is preferable. And that's a part of the conversation too. Is there a more power efficient way to to process these things. And I think that is also an important conversation. Is your block, we've hit on a bunch of them. Is your blockchain running on renewable power? Well, then the amount of energy it's using isn't as much of a concern as it is if it's on polluting power. Is your blockchain doing proof of work or proof of stake? If one's going to use less power. Okay, so that's good too. You're right. It's not a simple answer. And there are a lot of different ways to approach the problem.
Sarah, do you remember we did Green Energy, that show years ago, talking about
Green Tech Today?
Green Tech Today, yes. I mean, do you see there being a change in the conversation around technology and power? And do you think there's been, in the last 10 years, any kind of evolution there?
Well, I mean, when you talk about power as... when you say something like, ooh, green tech, it's like, saving the earth, sustainability, you know, lots of buzzwords. And some people kind of go, I don't really care about that. Well, you care about it if it costs you less. and I think that's where it's a lot of people have gotten hooked to, okay, alternative energy or new energy that can either create wealth or back away from the cost of things that we've all gotten used to. Everybody loves that. And I think that the kind of, you know, I don't want to call it hippy dippy because I think green technology is really important, but the connotations that some people have about the future of energy and being able to harvest it more responsibly and more intelligently. I think a lot of people have come around to that. Whereas in the past, it was thought of as a lot more fringe.
Yeah. Yeah. I really hope that moving forward, especially where we are with climate change, carbon emissions, and the increasing global temperature and everything that's happening, I hope that technologists who are applying the sciences to these, to blockchain, to anything really, like even the phone in your hands, where are you sourcing your materials? Mm-hmm. Can you cradle to grave all of the resources that are needed to create the thing that you're creating? Can you take account for all of the resources and assets that are needed? I mean,
yeah,
it needs to be part of that consideration, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely the biggest piece in this question that I think is not being asked. Is when you talk about environmental impact, this is one piece. This is just one very small piece of your environmental impact. So sure, you can say that Bitcoin is terrible for the environment because it takes a bunch of energy. But there are other things out there that have other impacts on our environment that aren't as well quantified or monetized. And I think that is really the problem, is that we need to find a way to assess the monetary impact on our environment more completely. And that's where, first of all, not all energy is created equal, but then did you cut down a forest to build this warehouse that you have these servers in? What is the whole, complete, comprehensive environmental impact of that thing that you're asking about?
Yeah, and that's why I'm really wanting somebody to compare that, like, current banking industry to running the industry on a blockchain, because what I don't want to happen is, oh, blockchain bad, shut it down. And then we end up using more power and wasting more power because we're using this old fashioned version that we're all used to. So we just grandfathered it in, when it's like, well, as bad as it was, it may have used less power than that. I'm not saying that is true. We may look at it and go, oh no, blockchain bad, you were right. Right. But let's find out.
This is very much like the healthcare debate. How are you going to pay for it? Okay, well, the first thing is you have this whole insurance industry in the middle taking profit. Oh, so you're going to put people out of work. Wait a sec. I thought we were talking about the cost. It'll shift quick, right? If you try to attack banking in any way.
I mean, part of it is there's so many – it comes in so many directions, right? It's the resources you use. It's the – what Blair was saying, it's the monetary impact of certain businesses that do and do not. I mean, the thing is, there's going to be winners and losers in everything. The goal is to make it so that there are more winners than losers in any kind of, you know, strategy that you work out. And it's, I mean, that's how it goes for everything. Like when they when we moved away from horses to internal combustion engines, there are sure a lot of people had stables that suddenly, oh, I have no more customers. No one's bringing in their horse for me to feed and take care of it until they take it out again.
Yeah, I can't sell any of my buggy whips anymore.
I'm a little concerned, though, about like the worrying about finding out what the economic impact of any of these things are.
I'm sorry.
Because what if it comes out the other way? What if the math comes out? You know, actually, the math actually works out. We're all going to have a really good short-term economic boost if we all stick with horses or whatever it is. Or if we tear down all the trees in the Amazon, we're going to have a net profit to the planet that will overcome.
Short-term. Short-term profit.
Well, I mean, that's
we might not like the answer. If we just put things in terms of money.
There are answers, but there are also interpretations of an answer. One answer you could give would be like for people who are making money logging the forest, yeah, let me just raise the entire Amazon and then make mint. But for people whose welfare derives from the Amazon being a standing forest, no, that impacts them adversely. If you talk about the cities that are next to that now have to deal with a bunch of smoke and haze every day because there are no more standing forests. I mean, like I said, there's going to be winners and losers, and the goal is that...
Who's doing the survey? Who's doing the accounting? Who's saying that for the greater good of the rest of the planet, I'm sorry, Brazil, or I'm sorry, interior forest dweller.
Listen.
No, they're just giving the good awards to Costa Rica. They're like, Costa Rica, you're doing amazing. We love
I realize that your straw men are very afraid of this question, but I'd actually really like to know what the answer is before I assume what the negative problems would be.
Yeah. We are going to move away from energy, the environment, NFTs. Who even needs those things anyway? Whatever. That's just money laundering. But we have questions to ask each other. We have some trivia. Yes. A little trivia. Yes. Is anybody ready for a little friendly competition?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do we want to encourage our chat rooms to help, or do we want them to be quiet?
I want the chat rooms to instant message me with all of the correct answers.
Well, at that point, then I should have redone my questions.
I'm just going to second what Justin says.
just assume I'm doing a call home for help every question. Yes. All right, but we're going to alternate. Science and tech. I've got questions that Blair helped me put together, Justin, and Roger has questions that he and the DTNS news team put together. So are you ready to rumble?
Indeed. Yeah. And really, the answers to these questions will be of interest to everyone, and you'll learn something. So really, everybody's going to win.
Yeah. Everybody wins.
Let the Twiz guys just give them a few seconds to suss out before you give them the answer, chat room.
I am very, very fearful of the tech questions.
I'm so scared.
I'm just saying. Right now, I'm like, oh my God.
Explain what an NFT is. Oh, yeah, no.
Which jumpers do you switch on a motherboard in order, simple stuff?
Red, black, yellow?
No, NFT stands for National Football Teams.
Oh.
It's the Washington nickname.
That's right. Okay, I have my first question. What organ has been adapted by green tree frogs to help them hear in the noisy tropical jungle environment? Is it A, their skin, B, the tongue, C, the lungs, D, the stomach? Which organ has been adapted by green tree frogs to help them hear?
I can picture the
skin. I have a guess. But stomach.
Lung or skin, Sarah? Which is your guess?
I was going to say skin.
Yeah, skin for me.
Daily Tech News Show has unanimously said
final
skin.
Answer.
I didn't know it was supposed to be multiple choice. That's
Justin, I hope you know this. I know Blair knows it.
It's between C
and D. This is from like 2 weeks ago.
This is from a story. All of the questions are from stories on the show.
I remember you talking about this story, and I remember where I was. I was folding my laundry when you did the story, and I can't remember what the answer is.
But the problem was the picture that we put up didn't go with the story.
Correct.
So this big bubble, I don't know if that's the thing that was actually...
Yeah, so they showed the throat expanding.
Yes.
They were doing buccopharyngeal breathing in the picture, but that had nothing to do with it.
No. So I put C. I was stuck with lung, but I don't think it's right.
The answer is C, the lungs.
Should have known.
I figured something to do with the air stack.
The inflation of the lungs changes the way that the ears, that the tympanum of the ears of the frog vibrate. And so it makes it easier for them to hear the calls of their loved ones over the noise of the jungle. It's tightly tuned when they inhale. It tunes
There's
them.
Nature's timpanies.
Yes. I hear you. Anyway. All right, Roger, your turn.
All right, so mine isn't a multiple choice answer. So
oh, okay.
Then we're definitely gonna,
I did all multiple choice for you guys.
All right. So this should be pretty simple. He is popularly known as the father of the World Wide Web.
You talking about Al Gore?
Hey, Al Gore.
No, I know who the guy is.
The guy who owns the dump trucks? No,
I can give you multiple choices.
He made not a nickel off of it.
Tom can give you multiple choices.
Okay, so
I'm going to say.
Oh, go ahead.
What is it? Tim Berners-Lee. Tim Berners-Lee.
Yes.
Correct.
You got
it.
Did
I get it right?
Yes.
Yeah, so Kiki's our team captain. I'm just being quiet.
I was like, Tim Berners-Lee, Vince Cerf. I've met Vince Cerf. Wasn't Vince Cerf?
I was
going to
throw Vince Cerf, Bill Gates, and Al Gore in as multiple choice options. Yeah, so.
There we go.
You didn't need them.
Right.
Woohoo! No, I got it. Okay.
We'll get the next one.
Okay, next question. Which of the following is not known to be represented by the mathematical astronomy of the ancient Greek Antikythera mechanism? A. Lunar eclipses. B. Movement of Neptune. C. The Olympiad cycle. D. Years and seasons.
Well, that would be the movement of Neptune.
You're right.
Yeah, because they didn't know about Neptune back in day of the Antikythera.
Good job. Five planets. Planets, though. Mercury, Venus, Earth.
Mars,
and Jupiter.
And Jupiter, yeah.
Yeah. And the sun and the moon. And other stars. It was very complicated. But, yeah, you got it right. Good job.
Yay.
No Neptune. Okay.
All right. This should...
Hey. Got all bees. I see all those bees in there in that chat room. Good job, team.
This one isn't too esoteric. This electronic instrument is played without physical contact, often used when music and sound effects are needed for an eerie situation.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's my favorite.
Theremin.
Oh, yeah. You got it.
I like theremins. Those are fun. Oh my gosh. Okay. The mRNA-based vaccines used by Pfizer and Moderna work by A, altering your DNA, B, infecting you with dead virus, C, using your cellular machinery, D, entering the cell nucleus.
C.
That is correct. All of the others are myths that have been perpetuated by people who don't like vaccines. The mRNA-based vaccines by Pfizer and Moderna just stimulate your body to make antibodies.
Yeah, to make the
to
stuff
get your immune system to go.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Who doesn't want to be stimulated?
In this case, do shoot the messenger RNA into your shoulder.
I like your joke.
Here's another. Here's another softball. Another name for expressing data size in the base 2 numeral system.
Oh no!
What? Say what?
Yeah, say it again.
I don't think saying it again will help, Blair. To be honest with you, you can say it slower, louder.
Is that binary?
You got it.
Oh,
there we go. I win. Okay.
I thought it was other than binary. Oh, see, I overthought it.
No, he said in the base 2, not except for. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. My brain worked. That was really good. Yay.
Yeah, good job.
Woo-hoo. Okay, the largest single creature on Earth is A, an aspen grove, B, a slime mold, C, a blue whale, D, a fungus.
A?
I think it's That's a fungus.
I think it's
I think it's the aspen grove. It's the one where
if it's not the fungus, it's the aspen grove. But
it's a fungus. Ah. It's a honey mushroom in the Malheur Forest in eastern central Oregon.
Yeah,
and it is the largest single organism because of the mycelium that's connected all underneath the ground. However, it is only the aspen grove is the close second.
It's the source of all the honey mushroom sauce.
That's right. Oh, I'm sorry. I lost it for everyone. Mm, ah, whatever.
And the honey badgers.
Yeah. All right.
I had that one, too. I got that one.
Here's a science-y one for you.
Theory
of physics must clocks aboard the GPS satellites compensate for to maintain accuracy?
I don't see my co-host saying, so I'm going to say general relativity.
Yeah, you got it.
So, extra points for general.
So some small tidbits of information. Because GPS satellites orbit the Earth and above the Earth, they actually go their clocks tick a little faster by 45 microseconds a day. So if they're not adjusted, they'll be off by 38 microseconds every day. And it's very important because those microseconds can mean yards, and if you let it drift any longer, miles away from your actual point,
then that's not good for GPS.
No,
but you can actually see in the Global Information System databases some very old plotting that was done compared to where things are now, and that you can have that exact sort of scenario take place where you have people have plotted streams. And they're yards off of where they had initially plotted them into the
curse of time dilation.
In our Twitch chat, people are saying it's not fair. She's a doctor. She cheated by studying her whole life and being smart.
Oh, studying. What good does that do anybody? All right, y'all. What happens when a sea slug's head is cut off? The head grows a body. The head and body die. The body buds baby slugs. The body grows a head.
I would say the body grows a head. What do you guys think?
I remember this story, and the real answer is all of the clickbaity headlines get it wrong.
That's true.
If it comes from the head, maybe the head grows another body.
I think that's right.
That makes more sense.
Feels right.
I will defer to these two.
All right.
And the answer is the head grows a body.
Yay. See, we just had to talk through it.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is kind of crazy because it's a pretty complex organism, and it doesn't just regrow. It regrows its heart. It regrows.
Yeah,
it
right. Regrows that was everything. What was so crazy about
it. Finds its soul.
If you cut off a sea slug's head, where does its soul go?
Well, the best part is they didn't cut it off, or the scientists didn't cut it off. The sea slug severed it off.
Oh, right. That's right.
They
cut off their own heads.
It was a personal choice.
What are they? Yes.
It was a lifestyle choice.
Yes.
Wait, is that how they reproduce? They just cut the heads off?
No, they reproduce by stabbing each other in the face with their phallus.
They don't use their eye stalks in any sort of reproductive manner.
No,
no, not after they've been stabbed.
Lie to me. In 1952, Grace Hopper developed this important concept in computer programming that led to the creation of the modern computer programming language.
Oh, what did? Oh my gosh, I don't know. I don't know this one at all. Grace Hopper.
Programming language.
Programming.
I'll go with the is it C
plus punch cards.
Is it the Pascal? What was the?
All right, I'll get. I've got multiple choices for you.
It sounds like a type of candy you would eat. I don't know how long.
Yeah, let's hear the multiple choice.
Multiple choices. Is it A, compiling, B, coding, C, bugs, or D, recursive logic?
Just coding. Did she make coding? No. Program? Yeah.
I'm going to go with the logic, the one that said logic in the word.
Recursive logic.
This sounds old because people haven't.
I need to learn this. What did Grace
time.
Hopper do? She's a big name in history.
She created the concept of a compiler, which is essentially a compiler. When you program, they make a programming language that makes it as easier to write instructions to a computer. The thing is, a computer uses what they call machine language, which is really unintelligible to most people.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next step above that is what they call assembly, which is a lot of memory locations and data that's supposed to go into it. If you've ever done it outside of a C64, it's very, very complex. It can be very confusing because it shifts from whatever hardware you're on. Computer languages are designed to solve that by taking relatively normal sounding phrases like, you know, initiate or int library to bring up a library or print hello, or echo on. And what a compiler does is takes those and then directs it to a memory map into a form that the machine will understand. And it's originally called linking. And the compiler is the program that does the linking. It takes all those phrases that you type out. It's why when you compile a program, if you just leave it in the source code, it can be kind of big. But once you compile it, it should be a bit smaller.
Yeah, so you don't have to write out 0100001.
You just say, like, move this here and call it a day.
Interesting.
Paul Sampson is saying, hello, world, surely.
Well, you still win,
world.
Kiki. So there's that.
All right. I'm glad. Thank you for that. I learned something that was very good. Which of the following is not an official scientific term? Muon. Shmoo. Sonic Hedgehog, Zelda.
Shmoo?
No.
Because I know Sonic Hedgehog is.
Yep.
Muon.
I know what a Muon is. So unless it's a trick question.
Maybe it's Zelda.
I think it's Zelda.
It is Zelda. Good job.
Yeah, I tried to throw us off with two video games.
No, I've heard of Shmoo before.
Oh, okay. All right. What's Shmoo?
I have two, even though I don't remember what it is anymore.
A Shmoo is involved in yeast reproduction.
So I could have sworn it was tickling the back of my brain that I'd heard of a Zelda connection, but I guess not. Yeah.
Nope. That's why I threw that in there.
What our listeners want to know, and definitely I know already, so I'm just asking for them, is what is a Sonic Hedgehog?
It's a protein, right?
Yeah, it's a protein, and there's also a gene that underlies it. Yeah, so geneticists it was around the time that the video game came out.
Is it the gene that makes the protein? Is that what Sonic Hedgehog? Okay.
Yep, and yeah, it's the gene that makes the protein, and geneticists really liked the video game, and so geeky geneticists named their gene after a video game, Sonic Hedgehog.
Isn't it one of the reasons that they've come up with a list of rules for naming now? I'm serious. I think there's a convention on naming because they're like, we can't let people keep calling stuff Sonic Hedgehog. Like,
you can't just make things video games. Then suddenly there is a Zelda.
That's no fun.
Yeah.
Well, there was a Zelda before,
I like the pop cultural references in the sciences. It makes things easier to remember.
Yeah,
true.
Sonic Hedgehog was called something else, I would never think of it ever again.
Or maybe you would know this. Then how's the scoring? Like, team Twiz wins by one.
We all win.
We all win.
So what is? I just want to ask you this real quick question, Kiki, since you love pop science or pop culture and science. What is the name of the spikes on the Stegosaurus's tail?
Phil and Sam.
Jeff? Is it Jeff?
Grace?
No.
I don't know.
It's Thagomizer, and it's
the
based
Thagomizer.
On a, yes. Based on a, it's based on a Gary Larson strip known as the Far Side of the Galaxy.
Love that.
And he did one where they had cavemen showing like a depict like doing a little a talk on the Stegosaurus, and he's talking about the Stegosaurus tale about how you should avoid it, and we're calling it the Thagomizer in respect to the late great Thag, whatever who got. Smushed by one.
Who got smushed by the tail? Oh, yeah. Nice.
Farside was one of the greatest.
Farside,
it really was.
My 10-year-old Kai is getting into the Farside right now. There was
an amazing exhibit at the California Academy of Sciences when I was growing up of Farside.
Oh yeah, I remember. Well, how old were you when you?
Do I remember?
I was in college, I think, when I saw that. Right or no? Maybe earlier. Oh, I've been there so many times before they redid it that it's all a blur. It's just one giant thing. And they had the fish tank, you know, the circular fish tank. That thing was so cool. Remember when they had the great white in it? The great white was always.
And it just swam around and around and around.
The great
and it
white
was
being affected by the tank, and it kept swimming the other way, like opposite the rotation of the tank. And it found out it's because the tank was all metal. It was throwing off the sharks.
Magnetic
sense. Direction. Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, that's annoying.
So many things.
So, yeah,
great whites don't do so well in captivity for so many reasons. I think there was one additional question, which we'll just put it out there to the chat room, to people watching. Can anybody order the host's birthdays by month and date, not year?
Oh.
A is Blair, B, Justin, C, Kiki, Tom, Sarah, Roger. Can you the correct
not by year?
By age.
Not by age, but by month and date.
Yeah, so like you're flipping through a calendar. What order would you see our birthdays?
Like January.
Whose birthday
here?
Comes
no,
first?
Wait a
yeah,
second,
so
wait
there's
a second,
there's
wait
three
a
on that calendar right behind you.
Is this appealing to people who are like good at... Think they're good at zodiac picking, like people's signs?
No, it's
like, what are we doing?
No, January, February, March, April. Who comes in January? Then you know who's next.
Justin, basically,
just look at Facebook.
People have to use Google, Facebook, or whatever, figure out our birth dates, and then arrange it in correct chronological
I
within
feel
a
like
year.
We're inviting
this
identity
seems
stuff.
Really easy.
Also, what street did you grow up on?
And then send us birthday presents.
Very specific.
Yeah. What was your first pet's name?
This is about presents, people.
Yeah.
Know
send
my
us birthday.
Birthday
presents.
Okay. Whose question was this? Who's got a birthday coming up? That's what this is. Okay.
I have a birthday.
We all do, really.
Yeah. We didn't get one last year, so we really got to make up for it.
Yeah.
I would like a banana split sundae. With real hot fudge.
Ooh, I would like a taco party.
No one's taking a crack at this in our chat rooms.
Nobody's
okay,
trying.
So because that one's too hard. Let's do it by age.
All right, here. I'll throw one to the chat room. Without searching on Google or Wikipedia or anything, what is the largest dolphin species?
I know.
Oh, I know that one.
Know,
that's
I know
that's my favorite animal.
The right feral cat.
What? No. No.
Largest dolphin species. No, not yet.
Bottlenose is one guess.
Oh.
I know. I will send
Amos,
somebody socks,
Amos,
right?
You got it. But does he
Delva. We've got Orca.
Ulysses Adkins and Ethan Kane both said killer whale first.
Killer whale.
Yeah.
Orca.
Did you guys hear about this? We did this story a little over a year ago now, where orcas were attacking fishing boats, and pretty much any boat that was the size they could manage, and they would be heading out to the
their
fishing territories in Mediterranean, south of France and Spain, and turning them around.
Mm-hmm.
They would beat into them until the boat was heading back, and then they'd leave it alone. And they hit like a bunch of boats, and they could actually track this pod because it continued to push boats back to shore all the way up the coast to take out a fishing boat in France or something like this.
They're protesting. They're telling you to go home.
They were. Yeah. They were then, mad about something.
And then recently, some people report seeing them in the Suez Canal.
Yeah, well, that's where I think that's where. Yeah, that's how that boat got stuck, right?
Right, it was the killer whales.
It's unconfirmed. Right. The killer whales.
Blame the killer whales.
I mean, whether they're transients or residents, you just keep your distance.
Okay, I think is that it? Did we do it?
We did. We got it.
We made it all the way through.
Yes.
This was really fun.
Yeah, this was super fun. Oh my goodness.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all for being here. Thanks, everybody, for watching and listening and hanging out in the chat. And if you want to find more tech news, head to dailytechnewsshow.com.
Woo! And if you need more science news in your life, you can head to twis.org. We will be there, sciencing it up every week. Woo-hoo-hoo! And, you know, I'd love to know what people thought about this show. I'd love to get feedback.
Yeah.
Did you like it?
Please let us know on whatever method works for you. Feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com is our email address. We might want to do this again if you liked it.
Yeah. And thanks everyone who sent in ideas for stories and things that we should talk about. It really set us on a nice little path of discovery and conversation. So really appreciate your interaction there.
Indeed.
Okay.
It's a high
we
mind.
Might want to do it again. We're going to end the show so that we can finish this one and hope to do another one in the future. Last words from everyone. Blair, what would you like to say?
This was really fun. I will throw something out to the Twitterverse since we were having our ever would you never, I don't remember what we called it, but about science topics, I would love to hear who actually would go to Mars and why or why not. Because this is a science and tech conversation, right? And I think that it's nuanced and interesting. So I would love to hear from people if they would like to go to Mars or not and why. And you can tag us in that. I'm very interested. Nice.
Good question. All right, Justin, what are your last words?
I don't know. The typical last word of a human being is cannot be said on the air. So I reserve it for that occasion when it really becomes that. Now, this was really fun. I'd love to do it again as well. This was a very nice, fun, casual chat. And I need to watch the show more. Because there's always something in your show that I've been searching for that I've missed.
Yeah.
There was a very recent episode where you're talking about outdoor projectors that they don't exist yet. That ones you really designed it for a long throw. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I've been trying to find one that you could actually mount on top of a school bus and drive around. And then actually ideally one that would be a periscope.
Ah.
So now I have to figure out how to take a small one, mount it to a periscope and be able to throw an image on anywhere the wall is handy to be able to.
I'll put you in contact with Marshall, Justin.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah.
There's always something on your show that sparks a lot of interest when I listen.
Sarah, your turn.
I'll keep it brief. I will not be going to Mars. Just don't even invite me. I will not go. I'm going to stay here on Earth where we have plenty of things to solve. Thank you very much. But have fun when you go and tell me all about it. Send me pictures.
Oh, I'm not going.
Yeah. Well, just whoever wants to go. I want you to enjoy your trip, Mars person. We'll have implants in our brains and we'll just be able to talk to each other anyway. So it'll be great. But yeah, real quick, this was really fun. I think so much of This Week in Science and Daily Tech News Show, we can learn a lot from each other, and we do. And let's keep the romance alive. Yeah.
Absolutely. Woo. Roger, what do you have to say?
This is a lot of fun. It's a great way to spend a Saturday afternoon. I will say that I learned a bunch about slugs and giant fungus compared to a stand of trees that are all the same organism. But really, it's fun because science and technology are really just two sides of the same coin, and it's beneficial to really understand both in order to get a better appreciation of both.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, Kiki, our work here is done. Good job. Daily Tech News Show will be back Monday with Tim Stevens, and I assume Twist will be back next Wednesday, right?
It absolutely will. 8 p.m. Pacific time. Woo-woo! In your head. Should we do that again?
Until then, remember,
it's all in your head.
I've got the kind of mind that can't get enough. I want to learn everything. I want to fill it all up with new discoveries that happen every day of the week. There's only one place to go to find the knowledge I seek. I want to know what's happening.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.